This is gonna be like I'm not a part of Facebook.
It won't be like you're not a part of Facebook. You're not a part of Facebook. Calling out to every group, we gon' make
this shit happen right here, right now. Hey, this is Brett. Welcome to School Sucks. Welcome to the most cleverly titled podcast episode of the year, maybe of your entire life. That is subjective. It's up to you. The superlative is just a suggestion. If you are a supporting listener, you are able to hear this about 12 hours before everyone else. The show contains time-sensitive material. After the outro music at the very end of the show, stay tuned. I will make sure you have very clear instructions to follow if you decide you want to act. Also, welcome back to Webmaster Tony. Thanks for listening, everybody. About to get it on, don't worry about the present day, he can't stop. I said get it on, we about to get it on, getting it on, all it up, told every group, we gonna make this shit happen right here, right now. I got chest pains, my left arm is numb, I sprang to my feet. This could be the big one. I Google my symptoms as I morbidly walk to the kitchen. I'm coming to you, Jerry, so I fry up all the bacon and I drink up all the liquor. If I'm going down, I'm going down singing. If I'm going down, I'm going down swinging. If I'm going down, I'm going down with a smile upon my face. If I'm going down, I'm going down happy. I've been living every day like it was the last day since I was 19 in Alpine Valley. Welcome back, Tony.
Thank you.
So it's been a while since you've been on the show. Do you remember your last appearance? It was the 6th anniversary of the show. So that was like almost 6 years ago.
Wow.
And we were speculating about the election that was coming up
right. The
following year. First time on the show was all the way back in 2013, where you, Osborne, and I were trying to figure out if we had autism. We were taking a test on Asperger's syndrome.
Right.
So if people have been around for a long time, they know you. We first met in 2012. We started working together in 2013. You've definitely been a very, very trusted advisor. And through the years, we've talked a lot about bigger picture happenings. You know, I've always valued your input and your awareness before anybody else in my world seems to know about these under the surface narratives. And, you know, we're here to talk today about where we think things are at in January of 2021. So I appreciate you being willing to offer that input.
Yeah, you mentioned 2015. The times were so innocent then compared to today.
Oh, I know. It seemed like we could do anything online. Yeah. I mean, we still can, but I meant it seemed like you could do anything on Facebook, let's say, in 2015.
I guess that's right around the time when things started to clamp down.
So, that was definitely a period of escalation and destabilization, as I've described it. And, you know, here we are 5 years later. So because we've talked a lot, like behind the scenes and off the air, I just kind of wanted to get your take. You run a business doing web development, marketing, sales. So you have your fingers on the pulse of that world. But like I said just a minute ago, you're also really tuned into a lot of dialogue that I think a lot of people in the audience, it's about what might be happening in the world. A lot of people are not tuned into this. So I just wanted to spend a few minutes up front here talking about the landscape in which today is Monday, January 18th, the landscape in which we're recording this conversation as you see it.
Well, you know, I was first on the internet back in the mid 90s. There was a higher barrier to entry to get on the internet back then. It wasn't as easy as it is today using a smartphone. Mm-hmm. So that, I guess you could say, helped minimize some of the, I'm trying to think of a nice way to put it. But there was no concern that your words were being monitored. There was no concern about censorship. There was never any concern that, you know, when you're searching for something online, that you're being fed results that are conducive to a certain political agenda. And then, you know, over time, we've watched it, you know, morph into this nightmarish panopticon where everything you do or say is being logged, not only, you know, what you do online, but like where you go and who you interact with. Even your private messages are being saved on a hard drive somewhere, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
and it's going to be sitting on a hard drive somewhere until one day some AI system can transcribe the words and then, you know, scan what we're talking about and search for red flags.
And that's at any time in the future. It's like there, we've realized, I mean, this is definitely something that we've realized, that the fact that something happened in the past, really at any given time in the past, I think Twitter and like celebrities is probably the best example of this. That doesn't matter, right? Like if it's a slow day, we'll time travel to whenever we need to. If somebody becomes a target, we'll find something on them.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, you know, if they want to destroy your career, that's one thing. But in the future, you know, who knows what they're going to be after? Perhaps people who are a threat to the system.
And the system is very nebulous at this point. We're in this period right now of trying to figure out what that's going to look like in the near future, in the medium term future, and in the long future. And I guess I would just add, I know this is kind of a difficult question, but we have talked about this off air. How much do you think the world is going to change specifically this week and maybe say over the next month?
Right. A whole new government basically is set to take power. Unfortunately, that new government is not going to like people like you running around speaking their mind.
Right. We've talked a lot about this too. It's like, what's the public face of what we do? What's the land that we're trying to operate on? Is it rented land? Let's get off that land. That's something that we're going to be talking about today.
And it's hard, even if you want to get off rented land, because there's no limit to what they can take away from you.
Right.
Obviously, they could disable your Facebook account. They could disable your Twitter account. They've been doing that by the tens of thousands recently. But if you're a big enough target, they will come after your hosting. They will come after your domain name. Unless you can create your own internet, there's really no way to stop it. Certainly, social media is no longer an environment where we can survive, certainly not thrive. People like you are being forced underground. Now, you're not very controversial compared to some other people out there. Mm-hmm. And I remember we had this conversation a few years ago. I think you felt like you were safe. And I told you that I didn't think so. I thought that it's just a matter of time before you're shut down, too. It hasn't happened yet, but it does seem like we're not too far away from that. And I think the future is to create private or at least semi-private communities outside the eye of Sauron. And it's going to become more and more difficult to become connected with communities like yours. You might have to, know people to get in.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the way a lot of my thinking has been going. And I was, I did an university weekly discussion group yesterday with a group of people talking about the tech side of this, looking at the options for various platforms of communication going forward. Yeah, also too, just to what you said about the bigger fish, I checked in just with their podcasts, not with them personally, with Dave Smith and Tom Woods yesterday, just because they have bigger shows, they're more aggressive in a lot of their messaging. So I just wanted to see where they were at. And Dave was saying something like, I've lost all these Twitter followers have just disappeared. And I mean, I don't do anything on Twitter. I posted on Twitter twice since the summer. I had, 4,600 followers there tops. And when he said that, I just got curious. So I went and I looked at my Twitter and I'm down hundreds and hundreds of followers too. They've just disappeared. So yep, there are people vanishing from these places. We've all heard the stories about what's happening with Facebook. You can say whatever else you want about the current situation, but that's kind of what we're leading to, is that, we have a really large Facebook group and it has, for many reasons, become kind of unwieldy, unreliable, a source of various types of stress and irritation for me. We'll talk about that in a minute, but right. If there's anything else you want to weigh in on, yeah.
Yeah, well, I wanted to ask you, at what point, I'm sure it happens at some time within the last couple of years, at what point did you realize that the writing was on the wall?
Pretty recently, just as far as like how my orientation has changed. Like when there were a lot of like social justice conflicts in the people amongst the people in the School Sucks community, this was happening like right around the election. And I actually commented on the show. It inspired me to do this series called Speed in Politics because of, we had a kind of unifying purpose to be in this group together. At the time, it was probably like 2,000 members, maybe 2,500 people. And all it was were the kinds of fights that you could see on the broader Facebook. And I was really kind of irritated with The lack of communication skills, the lack of problem solving skills. It was a tenser time, 2016, than I think any of us had encountered online before. But I think that was probably like the first clue that this was not the ideal place to communicate. But as far as like writing on the wall in a way that really started to make me think about alternatives, it's really been in the last like 3 or 4 months. And I'll just mention some of the frustrations I've encountered. I've had to PM people about using certain language in the group. So like somebody, I'm like apprehensive right now about even saying some of these terms on the podcast, and certainly was frustrated to see people using them in the group in a kind of careless way. So let's call it the WN word to describe a lot of the people who made news, with their Unite the Right.
WN?
WN word. So it's two words. And okay. So we have a little game that you and I can play and the audience can play here as well. Describes people like Spencer, the people we saw at the Unite the Right rally. There's the WS word that goes along with that.
Okay, I got it now.
Somebody starts throwing these terms around in terms like bigot in the group. And they're doing it to win arguments. And I had to PM, I saw several occurrences of it, and I PM people where I saw it. And I said, hey, can you be careful about the language that you're using in this group? Again, Dave Smith, a barometer, I think he got his whole group shut down or limited for this reason. So yeah, don't call somebody a label that you feel comfortable, like you want to put somebody in a box so you can throw that box away.
What, like bigot?
All of these terms, right?
The conversation enders.
Conversation enders. Exactly. Yeah. Bridge destroyers.
Right.
And you're just doing it to win an argument and be able to walk away from that argument feeling good about yourself. So I said, don't do that because you're creating a liability for me with this group. So now it's like, I care about the group a lot less. There's, 3,000 plus people in there. There's maybe a couple hundred waiting to get in, but I'm not even like vetting people for entry anymore. I had to remove a post yesterday because some guy who posts pretty frequently posted something that was kind of sympathetic to what we saw happen in Washington, D.C. the week before last. And I just had to remove the post and send a message like, hey, don't post stuff in this group like this right now. That's not what this group is about. The group has, or the whole Facebook group structure has lots of practical impediments too. Like there's no way to effectively archive or curate valuable information. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's made it difficult on purpose, I think.
Yeah, there's no way for people in the group to do self-segmentation, meaning that like if people come together around a common interest, they can't break off inside that group to have their own discussions. So the discussion is just very unfocused and it's only chronological and there's no other sorting mechanism for it other than popularity or like me pinning a post to the to the top of the group. And of course, we're using a platform that has a super uncertain future. So the way that anybody can go in there, not anybody can go in there, but anybody that I've approved based on like, you're not in 500 Facebook groups and you're just joining this because you love joining Facebook groups. Hopefully we have some mutual friends. Hopefully, like, I don't want anybody who's been on Facebook for less than, a year. I would probably not approve somebody for that. So I've been very, very selective about that, but I'm looking to like 10X or maybe 20X my selectivity for people who are in a community that I'm running. So that's kind of where I'm at. I see the writing all over all the surfaces at this
point. Is there anything in particular that comes to mind regarding censorship? Like, what do you feel makes you a target?
Alliances. One of the things that everybody out there right now needs to be concerned about it, while still finding that balance of courage. You need to just be careful about how you can be mapped to other people and what those other people are saying. So,
Isn't that pretty scary that we're living in a time where you need to be responsible for the opinions of everybody who you're in the same room with?
That is terrifying. And there's a great example of this right now, this 17th letter of the alphabet conspiracy crowd that is going around.
Right.
That is totally an example of a self-perpetuating conspiracy circle jerk.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the movie Memento?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
So I've talked about Memento for various reasons, various forms on the show in the past, but I was talking to somebody last night actually reached out to me and they said, I have a friend who's gone off the deep end with this whole conspiracy theory and how Trump is this heroic figure and it's not over yet and all this shit.
Right. Yeah.
So she says to me,
high on the hopium.
What would you do in a situation like this to basically intervene? And the Memento story kind of struck me as like a useful example of understanding this, where for those who haven't seen the film, this dude has no short-term memory and he's trying to figure out who killed his wife, right? So he's got this mystery to solve that because he has no short-term memory, because of that, he can't like make more of an identity for himself. He can't move through life purposefully because he can't remember.
He's always in the moment.
Yeah, he's always in the moment. So the only thing that he can grasp onto is the sense of purpose that he is going to solve this mystery of who killed his wife because the police couldn't do it. This is what is giving him the fuel to continue going from one day to the next. He has tattoos all over his body that, you know, every day when he sees himself without a shirt on, he's reminded of what he's trying to do. Now, the way the story is told, the way the film is edited is brilliant because you never know more about what's going on than the character does, because it cross cuts like scenes going forward with scenes going backward. And the stuff going forward and the stuff going backward actually meet at the end of the movie. So it's this non-linear storytelling makes it so you're in just as much confusion as he is. It would be a very, very boring linear movie. So the very end of the movie as the audience is actually the middle of the story for him. And to this point, he's been carrying around this photo of this guy, Teddy, who is helping him. It says throughout the entire movie on the photo, don't believe his lies. But at the very end of the movie for us, we see, and this is to the whole conspiracy theory.
Spoiler warning.
Yeah, circle jerk thing. People, I've mentioned this movie 30 times on the show. Everyone in the audience should have seen it by now. So at the very end, Teddy reveals to him, he's like, dude, you're done. You've got the guy. We got him a year ago. And we just keep going through this again and again and again. And in this final lucid moment, before the memory of that fades, he takes all the evidence that Teddy gave him and he burns it. And then he flips the picture of Teddy over and he writes, don't believe his lies. That is basically this 17th letter of the alphabet conspiracy theory, where right. These people are just in this endless pattern of self-gratification where they cannot take themselves away from the pleasure or the purpose that this thing is giving them. So there are dead enders who still believe that something is going to happen with this, that Trump or something bigger than Trump emerges heroic in this whole situation. I don't know. I just think stuff like that is really dangerous. And I want to be, to the original point that we were trying to make, really careful about the associations to anybody who is broadcasting any kind of faith in something like that.
Right.
You can say whatever you want about that.
Well, I have to be careful what I say. Mm-hmm. It sounds like, you know, sounds like you want to be pretty careful about this one, what's happening yeah. in the news.
Yeah, I'm talking basically in code language.
Right, 17th letter and all that.
But you followed this originally with some interest, and then it became more of a form of entertainment, right?
Yeah, definitely. It was, at first it was interesting. Initially, it did seem like there was a possibility that there was some kind of legitimacy to what was going on there. Over time, you know, it became apparent that wasn't the case. But it is kind of an interesting case study in human psychology, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you basically agree with the the analogy that I used as far as like what is giving them purpose there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's not. The people who are involved in it, they don't want you to try to convince them otherwise. And I kind of relate to it a little bit. You know, like I think everybody has things that they want to be true, things that you wish were true, but there is a difference between is and ought. There are a lot of things that ought to be true, but don't confuse that with what is true. Just because it ought to be true doesn't mean it is. If you accept the reality of the matter, I mean, it could be very depressing and blackpilling
yeah.
when you let it all sink in. I don't want to like be too depressing about it, but you're like a good compass to have, because when I come to you and, you know, we talk every week, and when we start talking about, maybe I share with you some piece of news, your mind immediately goes to like, okay, so how can we use this information? And I think that that's a good mindset to have. Focus on what you can control. When you take in information about the news or you know, the world around you, your mind should immediately go to how is this going to affect the decisions I make in the future? And if you can't come up with anything, like if there's nothing, if you can't come up with any way that this is going to affect your decision-making moving into the future, then maybe, you know, you should just ignore it.
I think that's a great point. And I think it's one of the reasons too, why this specific conspiracy community that we're talking about has become so unhinged, it is so far outside of the average boomer's control, who's like, you know, sitting in front of a computer and trying to make meaning and get a sense of self-efficacy. So it's like, you know, I'm solving the greatest mystery. I'm part of this heroic group that's trying to root out all of these evils. And you know, another comparison that I've done to this community is the old PlayStation game Katamari Damacy, where the dude rolls around and picks up garbage.
That's a deep cut. I'm surprised you know about that game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So for people who don't and you're missing out, there's this old PlayStation game where I don't know if the story didn't translate perfectly from Japanese, but there's a guy who's a king of a planet. You're a character who's trying to win the affection of his daughter and his approval. So your mission is to roll around and pick up garbage. And the bigger ball of garbage you become, the bigger pieces of garbage that you can pick up until you can pick up like buildings and stadiums. And
it's really fun.
Yeah, it's totally fun. And so you see the psychic payoff that a lot of these people in the conspiracy version of it would be getting as they can pick up bigger and bigger stuff. The double-edged sword of that, there's so much truth that has been incorporated into this kind of theory that there are global elites, that there are exploitative things happening in the circles of power against all kinds of people. These things are truth. And now, because it has this label attached to it that we've avoided using throughout this entire conversation, anytime in an increasingly censored world where somebody has a goddamn question about something that's happening, as things are locked down, as businesses go under, as speech is policed more and more, if a person raises their hand, as we were trained to do, and says, is this okay? Is anybody asking questions about like what the second or third order consequences are of the way everything is moving right now? They say, oh, you're one of those people. You're one of those people who went to the Capitol, right? It's kind of like when I've gotten into arguments about people and with people and they really didn't know what to do with what I was saying, they wanted to like shortcut to, all right, how do I dismiss you by uncovering the craziest thing you believe? If I can expose you or like an anti-vaxxer or you don't think we went to the moon.
Or you're a racist.
Or, oh yeah, very, very
useful. Or you're a bigot or you're a, you know, other, you know, whatever kind of phobe.
Exactly. Then I don't have to listen to anything else that you're saying that I don't know what to do with. So, I mean, that is the sad thing about this conspiracy community is they're going to wind up taking with them to the information gulag lots of places where I think you maybe could have connected with people, places where people should be curious, where they'll be afraid to be curious.
Are you saying that they're going to sort of discredit?
That's a perfect one-word summation of what it was taking me 2 minutes to say. That's exactly it. And I had to bring in a video game and a movie to do it. 10 minutes, 20 minutes to say. Yeah, discrediting. Yeah, that's it.
But definitely the whole 17th letter thing, they definitely do touch on a lot of things that are real. It's sort of like a perfect psyop in a way, where it exploits certain cognitive biases that people have. So the way that it works is the person or the people behind it are posting these very cryptic messages. And then the people who are reading them are working to interpret them and see what they say. And the rationale behind this is they say that, well, they can't just tell us because that would be leaking classified information. So they have to just sort of give us sort of direction on what, you know, where to research and that sort of thing. And that's how they rationalize this, these, you know, these cryptic messages. So they decipher these cryptic messages and then they make predictions like, oh, this is what the 17th letter of the alphabet is telling us right now. And then that, you know, whatever date rolls by and then whatever prediction they had turned out to be wrong. And then now they could say, well, actually, he didn't say that. That's what we came up with. We must have misinterpreted what he said. But then if one is true, when if one of them, it turns out to be accurate. And a lot of times these predictions, it's a lot of times it's easy to make predictions because of, you know, what's happening. You and I have made plenty of predictions that have come true. We don't have a million boomer followers hanging on to every word.
Right.
Yeah. It's completely unfalsifiable.
It's almost like gamifying powerlessness, I think, or that an ability or a desire to not feel powerless. But the truth is, the more of this stuff that you take in, back to a point you made a little bit ago, that you can't do anything about, the smaller and smaller you get in your own mind, and the more overwhelmed you are with information that isn't actionable. So that almost perpetuates this obsession, I think, for a lot of these people.
And it kind of makes them feel like they are taking action, right? It kind of gives them all this busy work, and they feel like they're working towards a certain purpose. What do you think is going to happen to these people, you know, a week from now, if, you know, Biden takes office and, you know, does everything he says he's going to do and Trump, you know, drifts off into obscurity or whatever is going to happen to him.
I think it's going to be the same thing we've watched since we started paying attention to politics, which is here's a situation that calls for a scalpel and all we have is dynamite.
Yeah, figurative.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point of clarification. In the past, how many people were Al-Qaeda? How many people were ISIS? Look at the scale of the response to dealing with Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, and that even spread to a whole other country where Al-Qaeda wasn't at the time bombs started to drop there. So how many people are involved in this conspiracy community? How much guilt by association can you use to spread that to? I was talking to my dad, he's conservative, and we were on the phone the other day. He's like, yeah, there's 75 million insurrectionists in this country right now, according to what they're telling people on television. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, there's that kind of gets to where we're at and what we're talking about here, too. What is our plan to minimize risk? And one really important step, this is a kind of a sharp transition here, if we're ready to make it. And of course, if there is anything else you want to say about anything else we've already said, don't hesitate to go back.
Okay, yeah, real quick. How do you feel about what's going on in DC right now? I feel like this is something important because it's happening right now. How do you feel when you look at those photos and you see like tens of thousands of military personnel walking around the Capitol?
And it's very unsettling. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're saying they may not leave.
Right. And it obviously has an optical purpose. Visual programming is very, very effective. So there are millions, tens of millions of people in the country right now seeing those photos without any awareness of how visual programming is used by the media without saying a word. I mean, plenty of words are said as well, but pictures go a long way. It's kind of like what I said when this thing happened in DC. I said, oh, that's like the thing that happened with the Unite the Right rally in 2017. This visual payload that people can use as B-roll to tell whatever story they want to tell and scale it to however many people they want. So in 2017, when they did this at the Unite the Right rally, they took the footage, this perfectly well-lit footage with all these terrible people and all their terrible chants, and they said, here's the right united. And this is symbolic of the kind of person who supports Trump. So it's interesting that his administration was actually bookended with these two events, one at the beginning to say these are who the supporters are, and one at the end to say, now this is the danger that they pose. Right. With him leaving, even if they had to kind of adjust like the properties of the groups a little bit to do that. That's not to say that that's all manufactured. There were plenty of useful idiots willing to participate in both of those events. The visual programming of the pictures of the soldiers is very disturbing. And actually I haven't really asked anybody like more from like a mainstream perspective, like how do you interpret that? How does that make you feel? I mean, if you've seen like the Star Wars prequels, you've seen imagery like that before, like that kind of transition. And there's that great meme going around, like nothing says democracy like, 20,000 troops needed to install a new regime.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, think about what it's going to look like on when we're watching the video stream of Biden's inauguration. It could be him standing there in front of tens of thousands of soldiers who are there explicitly to, if they need to kill the people who he is going to be governing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like they're there for us. I mean, explicitly so. Yeah. They're not there to, for some foreign enemy.
Well, that's the backdrop, right? That's the week ahead. We're recording this, like I said, on Monday with a plan to release it on Tuesday. I said to you before the start, that's the last day of this week anyway, that I expect to be able to command the attention of thousands of people with everything else that will be competing for that attention after that. So I want to just talk about what the plan is as it relates to our presence, specifically in this case with social media. So I talked a lot about these frustrations around the Facebook group. My current plan is to delete my personal Facebook profile and delete the group by the end of January. So we're talking less than 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, that's funny. I was just doing the same thing. I had just downloaded all of my data from Facebook. And the only reason I have a Facebook account is so that my, boomer relatives can see pictures of my kids. Mm-hmm. I'm doing the same thing.
Right. The way things are right now, I'm happy to have a growing podcast audience. I'm happy to have people engaged with what we're doing and implementing what we're doing and benefiting from what we're doing. But the way that we do it is definitely going to change a lot And the question that I'm basically here to ask is, you know, who wants to come with us somewhere else? And it's not going to be like we're up and moving to another platform, we're up and moving to MeWe or anything like that. We're going to try to do something much, much smaller in scale and much, much easier to moderate, not in a sensorial way, but that's actually the tipping point that I'm trying to find is like, what is this magic number of people who can come together in a cooperative and constructive community? And we've already kind of built a test case for that. I've also watched my friend Rich do it with his autonomy course, which is an amazing private online community. And I want to add to the one that we've already built.
Yeah.
So we did a brainstorm about this in our discussion group yesterday. I think there was like, it was really small. It was only like 10 or 12 people because we just moved it to a weekend time. We were actually doing this Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, but it was just like prime work and energy time for me. So I had to put like one longer meeting into the weekend, but that's all flexible. That all might change. And this is for the University Ideas into Action Summit. Anybody who is a part of that can participate in these weekly discussion groups that were designed to give people support or be able to answer questions or talk to presenters from Ideas into Action, but also a community around just kind of navigating the chaos of the current time as well. So we brought, I think in total, about 125 people into that community through purchasing tickets to the event that we ran back in 2019. And now a lot of the questions are around like, what is the max we can scale this to? And then when we reach that max, what changes do we have to make to scale it beyond that, if it can, and maybe it can't. But part of the discussion yesterday too was like, how stable is Discord as a platform? What's the future of that? What stories? And then it became kind of like a research project, like who knows anybody getting kicked off Discord? And what are the alternatives to Discord? So we found one called Guilded that could be a backup in the future. I'm sure others will develop. I don't want to go back to the clunkiness of like online message boards. Discord is an incredible program. It has a very, very useful interface. You can do all kinds of things on there that you can't do on Facebook. The community we've been able to build, the regular participants, it's a small number of people. And that's been great to be able to beta test it. But like, I'm very grateful for the connections that we've been able to make. And that's me to these people and these people to each other. In fact, somebody in the Discord recently is like, hey, there's a chat room here or a voice chat room. We don't need to wait for Brett. We can just chat. And I was like, that's it. Exactly. Please go do that. One of the things that I actually want to do in Discord is set up what I'm going to call neighborhoods. Where if people want to start a neighbor, like there should be the basic ones for School Sucks, like critical thinking and learning, where people can, you know, discuss logical fallacies, or, you know, they could have study groups on these things if they want to. Another one on all the personal development topics that they could break out even further than that. Another one on alternative education. And then if somebody has like a specified interest related to one of these things or not, but just, you know, with the connection of like self-directed education, go make your own neighborhood inside that Discord and, you know, bring a breakaway group there that can still integrate with the main group when we want to do discussions, or, you know, we want to try and talk about a problem. Or one of the ways that I want to use our meetings going forward is actually to have people showcase the action that they're taking. I mean, this summit was built around the idea, or basically the question of, how do you increase your confidence and your influence? How do you optimize your research, synthesis, and persuasive abilities? So confidence and influence really through information. So once people see all this content, people like Steve Patterson, Scott Hambrick, Professor CJ, Tom Woods, Michael Malice, Kevin Geary, how are you going to do something with this stuff that shows up in the real world, which people in the group are already doing? And I think that's awesome. So I want people to be able to discuss that, to bounce ideas around, to solve problems together. But this is not going to be a group that has thousands of people in it like Facebook. That is just, at this point, I see no way that that's manageable all around our brand. Like, you know, anybody can go and set something like this up for their own interests, but we have a great foundation. We have a great start. We have, a unified mission, even if we don't have like total ideological similarity. So that community is something that I really want to build in lieu of this faux community that we've had, you know, online for all these years. I mean, the right. Facebook group's probably like six or 7 years old.
Really high quality audience you have. Probably the highest IQ of any podcast audience on the internet.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we might not have the biggest audience, but the quality of people, like my entire social circle is composed of people at this point that I met through the show by sending the show out as a signal. Everybody who gets my time and aside from family, who gets my time and attention in life are people that I met through the show. So yeah, that is kind of the question when we get to like, who wants to come with us? I'm thinking initially, I'll open this up to 150 people who are right for this. And this is a place where I actually have to be a little selfish and say, this isn't just like an open offer like this University thing was for the last year and a half. Are we right for each other? Can we be friends, right? This is not a Facebook group. This is like my space or our space. So I want to be like very selective here.
Yeah, and we're going to have secret handshakes. We're going to have rituals. We're going to have cloaks.
We're going to have code letters.
Right.
You know, I mean, that would mean asking yourself questions like, could you be on a call? Could you be in a Discord audio chat room or on Jitsi with 30 other people on some charged up topic and know what the right length of time for you to speak is? Could you? I even wrote down a whole list of attributes of like the people that I'm looking for.
Are you based? Are you red pill?
Well, we got to be careful because that means so many things at this point. Red pill is like a huge catch-all. But a big part of that is like, are you living consciously? I think that's huge.
You know, what's your high score in Tetris? how much can you deadlift?
Oh, man, that would be pretty selective. But I can run through, I divided it into basically four attributes of like, you know, before people even ask how they can do this, like answer these questions. The four categories were outlook, execution, self-image, and just your image socially. So outlook would be like, are you growth oriented?
Right.
Are you interested in learning and mastering new skills? Are you interested in, you know, realizing places where you're wrong? Or are you going to dig in your heels and double down like people do on Facebook? You know, that's not what I would want to see. And I've always been, we've had a couple of occurrences where things got a little heated on Discord, but because the community is so small and because it's not like a performance, like social media is, the cooler heads eventually prevailed. But growth orientation would be the most important, like outlook thing that I'd be looking for.
When you say growth orientation, like in what aspects of a person's life are you looking for?
Well, I would say that it would be personal, but a lot of the intellectual is personal first, right? Like if you're doing all these intellectual pursuits, but that your house is not in order personally. And I understand that we're all a work in progress. You know, we're all constantly trying to improve or recognize shortcomings that we have personally, emotionally, et cetera. But a commitment to that kind of growth is something that really aids with intellectual growth. People can be extremely smart and entirely disastrous. And
right.
If that's the case, you know, they're not very helpful to other people. So the combination of those two things is like a willingness to learn, to master new things, to, you know, be able to support other people through doing that and having the kind of personal foundation to commit to that is growth oriented to me. That moves to execution, which is really just about, focus, being energetic, being purposeful, knowing what, you know, the next thing you need to do is, or what can be done, or something doesn't seem like it can be done, how can it be done? And also being supportive of, you know, other people, especially as a challenging year lies ahead of us. If somebody is in this group saying, I don't think I can do this anymore, this specific thing that I was trying to do doesn't make sense, or I'm going to give up, like, can somebody use their commitment to their execution to be supportive of somebody who's in a situation like that?
Right.
In a way that people are just not going to be comfortable with in the, you know, the broad audience of a social media group that has thousands of people.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So the self-image piece would be like consciousness. I mentioned living consciously through all situations. There's plenty of situations in our lives that invite, you know, going on autopilot or telling ourselves stories that aren't true. And just like a commitment to what exists around me. That certainly helps being conscious with other people too. Mm-hmm. Being balanced is going to be, I think, really important in these situations, like a sense of serenity, change or accept it kind of thinking. And really important, I think, to being supportive of a group like this is like optimism. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hard to do looking out at the whole like political or social landscape in the near future.
Yeah.
But if a group of people are able to bring, you know, an optimism about their own lives or their own projects, and that can kind of, you know, coalesce into a group optimism, that would be ideal.
Right. Yeah. I think that what you're describing is going to be very important, very valuable moving forward, especially for people who are maybe worried or troubled about the way things are going, to have a community of people out there who are going to help keep you focused on the right things and stay optimistic. It's going to be invaluable if things are actually going the way that they appear to be going at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think communities like that are going to become harder and harder to find as well.
I think so too.
Because we have to go underground now.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these other people who were forced underground, you know, not to compare ourselves to like all of the people who got deplatformed 4 years ago, but one of the reasons why so much crazy shit happened is because a lot of unwell people were forced underground and they said, oh, well, while I'm underground in this social virtual prison, I'm just going to do push-ups and pull-ups. And then when I come out, I'm going to be stronger and I'm going to be more of a problem. So I think that a period of, I don't want to call it retreat, but a period of like, let's actually bring a tighter group together around a common interest, around common commitments that I've kind of laid out as far as like, you know, self-image, execution, outlook is concerned. That's where we have to be at right now. The only other piece of like the attributes that I was looking for was the social. And I would like people to, you know, be kind, but with proper boundaries, relaxed. And I think independence, like people are not, one of the biggest problems with social media, and it exists certainly inside groups too, is people are seeking kinds of validation.
Right.
I mean, you could argue that every single social media post by me or anyone else has at least, as part of its purpose, validation.
I mean, who hasn't, you know, gone back to check the likes on a post, you know, three or four times?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I just talked about that in a recent show. Where it's like, I'll screenshot a meme, it'll take 25 seconds and it'll get 100 likes, and then I'll put 10 hours into something and post about that and it'll get 6. And it's frustrating. But yeah, I mean, there's a part of that is about like validating, having people that you whose opinions you care about validate the work that you do. So it's not something I think that anyone can escape 100%.
If you're going to be seeking validation, you should be seeking it from the right people.
That's also a good point. But I think just having a kind of stance and a commitment to independence is a really important social aspect of, you know, what we're looking for here as well. So all of this has started to happen with like a really tight group of people that so far has just been a blessing for me. It's not like I'm going to be able to form like super close personal relationships with any of these people. I think I'm pretty like maxed out socially as it goes right now, but they have that opportunity to do that with each other. We all have the opportunity to interact with each other, to share ideas. It is the most meaningful and connected audience interaction that I've ever had. It's happening on a very regular basis. And there's a lot of people out there who are going to feel increasingly isolated. Like I wouldn't want to be the only non-blue-pilled person in my circle of friends right now. So non-blue-pilled is whatever you whatever you want it to mean, but we know what blue-pilled is. And that would be a very, very difficult kind of situation, I think, for a person to be in. But people, obviously, just because of the circumstances of 2020 and 2021, people feel more isolated than they ever have anyway. And they can't even go to these places to connect with others without seeing all of the blue-pilledness in their midst through their news feeds, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or, you know, any of these places. So, right. You know, having a supportive community where part of the reason we started the weekly discussion groups was like, take the lessons of this summit that we put together that people can go through at any time, you know, whether they attended it live or in 2019 or not, and bring your problems, but also like, let's apply them to the current situation. Sometimes people might just be like, here's the current situation. Here's how I'm feeling about it. Can we just like, you know, 5 or 6 of us just talk about this for a while? Cause I've got no one else to talk to about this. I can't talk to my family. It's like at a time where people might have to, like 10 years ago, I didn't have to make, I was wrong to not do it, but I didn't have to bite my tongue.
You didn't have to hide your power level.
It's true. But I think people might feel like they need to do that a little bit more because they understand in the shut away world that people might continue to live in throughout 2021, that they might have to make trade-offs and sacrifices and not say the things that they think or feel. Yeah. And that sucks. And I find myself doing it too. You know, like when I returned to New Hampshire last year, I envisioned this role of like, I know more about what's happening than people in my family, and I can help them prepare and I can help them stay safe. I think I might have been a little overzealous in some ways, but it didn't matter. Like, I could have brought blueprints of the next 12 months and nobody really would have looked at them.
Except for boomers on the internet, right? As long as you're cryptic enough.
No, I mean, that was like something that was actually really frustrating is like, you know, two parents who were approaching elderly status and saying like, these are the things you need to do, and getting them to do some of it, but also feeling like it was kind of a fight. And then other people in my family saying it's not even worth, like, it's just wasted oxygen for me to even try to tell them what they should be doing right now, because they're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. Their normalcy bias is too strong. So yeah. And then it's just like, boy, all the energy and time I spent pontificating 10 years ago, I wish I just had reserved that to use it in a constructive, I wish I hadn't burned those bridges. Because now, in a time where people might actually need some guidance, it's kind of like, all right, yeah, we're exhausted with you, you know, telling people how they should think and what they should do.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
But when your communication skills have much improved, I think a lot of people in the audience can identify with what I'm saying. And, you know, the things you're trying to communicate about are actually much more urgent. So one of the most important functions of the community, this private community that we built so far, is that people feel like they're getting that support.
Yeah. I mean, if you're somebody who listens to Brett's podcast, and I know you are because you're listening right now, I'm sure that you have a hard time finding people in the real world to relate with, friends, family, or anyone else.
Yeah. I would like to know where people are doing that. If they are, I mean, where would places be right now where people could be doing that?
It's weird, because if you want to have a conversation with somebody that you meet, you have to like be really careful about it. You have to like drop little hints here and there to sort of test the waters before you start opening up.
Yeah. And then are you going to say one wrong thing where it's like a point of no return?
Uh-huh.
Because of some association or some shortcut that they can't undo, no matter how well you can explain something. And the risk of this happening has increased so much just in the last 2 years, where it's so much easier for you to be seen now. I mean, and in the last 2 weeks, geez, as a dangerous person for one idea that you might hold, that they're just going to play this association game with, and, you know, wind up being very, I don't know, afraid to even be connected to you. So at this point, what the offer is here is initially a cap of 150 people. And I had a meeting with the people who are already in this Discord community yesterday. And I asked, I said, you know, are you ready for the group to grow by this size? And we'll see. I mean, it could take a couple months for that to happen, but are you prepared for that? What do you think the right number of people is for that? What's the tipping point? I felt like there was agreement on openness to 150 people from this 3,000 plus Facebook group. And the audience is like, the max audience for any podcast is like more than three times the size of that. So a lot of people will hear this offer. It's not the first 150 people that I'm looking for, right? And that was one of the reasons why I would really ask people to do some self-examination as to like, are you right for what we're building here? And would you also accept with like a verbal agreement, you know, if you came into this community and I had to say to you, look, it's not a good fit and here's your money back. Like, let's have a peaceful end of this part of our relationship.
Yeah.
So it's 150 people who are actually willing to put skin in the game. And this is, you know, like a Taleb concept, but it came up a couple of years ago in the series that I did with Moritz Berling and Skinner Lane about the problem with the current information landscape and social media. And they said the reason why Facebook is what it is, Twitter is what it is because it's the city dump. right? It's free to use. Everyone could go there and they can just drop off whatever crap they want.
Almost no barrier to entry.
There's no barrier to entry. And that's kind of like the difference between the internet that we first encountered.
Yeah, exactly.
And the internet of today.
You had to actually be able to use a keyboard back then. Now, now all you have to do is be able to, you know, poke around at your phone.
Yeah. There's that barrier to entry, which was good for, you know, certain aspects of it, but it's also, it's created a lot of problems. And, you know, that being said, again, like looking at the success of what we've already done and looking at the success of what Rich has done with autonomy with a very high barrier to entry, this is what the offer is. At this point, all the low barriers to entry around joining our university community or getting access to the Ideas into Action Summit, they're removed. I want this to be hard. I want the right people. So there's no 30% off. There's no 50% off. So we're breaking a lot of rules here, right? There's no massaging. There's no foreplay. This is kind of like the part in Jerry Maguire where he says, who's coming with me? There is a coupon code for 5% off. And I'm only doing 5% off so we can sort the people who come in through this offer. That is the only lowering that we're doing of the barrier to entry. People can purchase Ideas into Action and they can get access to this Discord community. Some of the details of that that are important for the 5% off, when you go to sspuniversity.com/ideas into action, and there's an easy like just link to click in the show notes and on the front page of the website and on just about every page of the website, but the direct URL is sspuniversity.com/ideas into action. Definitely look at everything that's there on the description page, but any of those green buttons you can click to take you to a checkout, put in the coupon code MySpace, all one word, because this is your space, this is our space, and then I will follow up with you and give you access to the Discord community and all of this content that you can actually start going through and put to practical use. So, I mean, you get a lot more than just this community. Now more than ever, like when we designed this whole summit back in 2019, it was an ideal product for the world that showed up the next year. And, you know, here we are in the year after that. People are totally overloaded with information. They're certainly aware that it's taking a toll. People are probably finding that they could communicate far more effectively, that they're wasting time, that they're getting time and energy drained from them from consuming more than they can produce. They want a way to make the things they learn more actionable. And like me, like both of us, they probably have that experience of walking away from a lot of crucial conversations in life, wishing they had been more effective, more persuasive. And now the stakes for doing that have never been higher. So, you know, this is a toolkit and it's very customizable. I didn't want it to make it like a procedural step-by-step, do all these things exactly like these successful people do. I wanted to say, look, Steve Patterson, you're really specialized and good at like information acquisition. Tom Woods, you're really good at being persuasive. What are the things you do? Give us the individual attributes of doing this. Allow people to build a custom toolbox of these things. And, you know, as a result of, you know, all of these lessons that do take some time to go through, people are able to, you know, use learning time more efficiently. People have gotten, I've watched people just skyrocket their confidence in being able to present or, you know, just speak semi-publicly. And hopefully, even though this landscape is changing, people figure out like the best methods and best outlets for their own expression. But, you know, at the same time, also develop better critical thinking skills, a greater willingness to confront like really difficult problems. We've seen all these things happen with the really small group of people that have gone through this already. And, you know, there's lots of benefits to consuming this content or even just going and, you know, discussing this stuff with people who have consumed this content in addition to this community that we are going to try, at least at this point, to max out at around 300 people. So they are about 150 people who can access it already. We will take another 150. The group kind of signed off on that number. I think that's reasonable. But anybody who's interested, like I said, I don't want it to be easy. right? I want people there that I can actually make a connection with. And I want people who have a willingness to invest in something. And like I said, that skin in the game thing is really, really important. It's one of the reasons why social media and these other forms of communication that we've tolerated for so long are such disasters, because people haven't had to do that. So I want to test it with a, you know, I mean, 300 people does not sound like a close group, but compared to the cacophony that we've been dealing with, like even in just a group, but in the broader picture of these platforms, like we need to get away from that. And we need to see what's possible. And, you know, this would be an opportunity for people to connect every single week with each other, every single week with me, and, you know, get support and growth and visibility. And I'm really, really excited to see where it can go.
So they make the purchase and then they're vetted?
There is an unanswered question here. Because we want to act swiftly with this, this sales page is open. This offer exists at the time that people are hearing this. Go put in MySpace, get 5% off, get access to this community. But it's with a verbal agreement that if you are not a good fit, if this doesn't work out, if you wind up not being well aligned with the attributes, and that's not just like going to be a unilateral decision by me. It's going to be, you know, like a cause and effect outcome of behavior that people exhibit in this group. I certainly reserve the right in the end to say, this is not a good fit. Here's your money back. Enjoy the podcast, or don't enjoy somebody else's podcast. Honestly, at this point, we don't have the time to vet 150 people individually. I even thought about just sending invitations to, like, I could find at this point, I've been doing this for almost 12 years. I have a list. I could start naming people, you know, that I want in this community, but I don't have time to prepare to do that either. So this is actually me putting a really high amount of trust in the people who hear this message and feel some resonance in it. I actually think that is a valuable test to run here. I don't imagine that I'm going to wind up with 30 people who need to be removed, you know, over the next year. We know what the quality of this audience is, and it's going to be offered to the people who support us on Patreon first, and people who support us in the AV Club first, and then we'll expand it to the entire audience. That's the plan. Mm-hmm. But that's everything. I cannot wait to not be on Facebook anymore, to not even have that as an option for a place to go. How do you feel about that?
Off the plantation.
Tony, I really appreciate you joining me for this conversation. And I appreciate all the great work you've done with us through the years and all the great dialogue that we've had about the things happening around us. I'm sure we're going to have a lot more of it in 2021.
Right. Thanks for having me on. I'm happy to be a part of this. And I look forward to this next stage. I was going to say like the next stage of like the school sucks, but this is something else.
Yeah, absolutely. The truth is, we haven't talked about this much yet, but this is something that is certainly going to outlive the School Sucks podcast. You know, that's if like Discord doesn't turn out to be the right place, it's going to go somewhere else. It's going to be, you know, just in addition to the things that we own, which is the MP3 files and the video files that I can carry around on a hard drive, the email list that we built, and, you know, some kind of platform where we can communicate with a select group of people. That's what we have, and that's what we're taking into the future, and that's all going to live beyond the podcast. So I'm really, really excited about, you know, building something that, given the current circumstances, is less fragile than what we've been carrying around.
And more anti-fragile.
More anti-fragile. There we go. Awesome, Tony. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The bacon is done as my pain subsides. It seems as if I was spared at least this time. Now that's a cause to celebrate. I take that seriously. Cause it's not every day you think you're gonna die. And you don't. Birthday place. If I'm going down, I'm going down happy.
I got chest pains. My left arm is numb. I sprang to my feet. This could be the big one.
Hi, thank you for sticking around for this part. Okay, I'm very excited because I've just tested all of this. It is currently about 9:30 on Tuesday morning. But if you're looking at this post on Patreon or in the bonus section of the School Sucks Project website, you will see that there is the Into Action hypertext that you can click. When you click that, we're going to go through this together. It will bring you to the overview page for the University Ideas Into Action Summit. If you haven't seen this page yet, take it in. Go ahead and read it. These are the problems you might be having. Go one fold on the website down. You'll see me, right, saying, I understand all these feelings, right next to a photo of me totally looking like a murderer. And that's exactly the kind of thing a murderer would say. But keep going and just take a look at everything that's here as far as what these presentations contain. Any of these green buttons that you encounter along the way, they say, like, get access now. The first one says, yes, obviously. When you click one of those buttons, it will take you to a checkout page. Now, on this page, in the left, there's a coupon code. And even though you're only getting 5% off here, I definitely want people to use this coupon code because I want to know that you came from this place. So I tested this today with a special coupon code I made for myself to get this whole thing for $2. I certainly shouldn't give that one away. But the one that you can use to get 5% off is MySpace, all one word. Proceed to checkout. By the way, you know, if you're a supporting listener, thank you for the cushioning that you provide. And it's not cushioning with dollar signs. It's kind of like with time and this push to take 15 minutes to say, what should this episode be called? What should the cover art, the unique cover art for this episode be? Do you know some podcasters just use the same thing for every little cover art? Do you know some podcasters just call their show episode 464? If they've already done 463 episodes, that is. Every show should be special. I think every show should get that thought. So thank you for, you know, signaling to me that this is valuable and I can continue to, if I need to, just take 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40, sometimes an hour to know what the right music, the right art, the right title means a lot. Sorry, me just saying MySpace made me think of that. In the title, it was two words. In the coupon code, it's one word. So anyway, we're at the checkout. It is just, you know, stripes, fields, information fields. They are going to ask you for, you know, address and phone number. After you check out, you will get an email. For me, it was instantaneous, but you should email me at brett@schoolsucksproject.com if you do check out and you don't get this. The email is going to be called University, Your Order is Ready. It will be like a list of the things that you get. It will be a link to join the Discord community. I'm just going to actually click that link to make sure it has not expired. Looks like that link is still valid. If you have any problems with that link, email me, brett@schoolsucksproject.com. But there are also links and passwords to all the content pages there. And we're already working on moving the whole summit as like a course to a better platform called Kajabi, and currently shelling out for that. So that's the process, and we can all be on a call together if you want this Sunday. All right, more stuff is coming soon. I have Matt Beaudreau back tomorrow. We're going to be doing that Hero's Journey for Teens show, and a couple new and old guests coming up as well. Hey, that guy that we talked about in the Panarchy show, we read his article, Brian O'Doherty, somehow found the show, listened to the show, emailed me. He wants to be on the show. So that we'll find the right time for that in the near future as well. But thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. I wish you well this week, and I'll talk to you again soon.